Howdy, friends. This is Annie Fonte, and you are listening to the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast. On each episode, I chat with a different guest and ask them to share their stories about what they were doing before they decided to redesign their life, what they're doing now, and how they navigated through the challenges and events in their life to get to where they are today. What realizations and transformations did they experience? What fears did they overcome? And ultimately, how did they create a life that they love? Hello, my friends. I'm really excited to have this conversation today about a topic that I think, well, I know that more than one half of Americans in their 40s and 23% of all adults in America are facing this situation. It's called the sandwich generation. And I have a guest today who has a lot of knowledge when it comes to this particular conversation and this topic. Her name is Arda Kargyan. She is one of the co-founders of Parentis, which offers coordinated services to include home health, home care, residential care, hospice, and transportation. And she is also the owner operator of Verona Court, which is a residential care facility in Southern California. I really appreciate you joining us today, Arda, to have this important conversation. So if we can just jump right in, I think the first thing I would like to ask you is to define for me and our listeners, what is the sandwich generation?
Hi, Annie. It's great being here with you. So let's get into the deep of it, right? Sandwich generation. Research shows that age group in their 40s and 50s, highest percentage being in their 40s, are considered the sandwich generation. It sounds very young, doesn't it? 40s, to think that we are in the sandwich generation. And the sandwich generation basically means we have parents 65 plus in age, and we also have children that we are caring for. So the highest percentage of individuals that are in the sandwich generation are in their 40s, and then the next age group is 50s. So as you can see, we are younger in the thought process, because we often think, oh, it's somebody who's, 60s in their later years. But in reality, it's our midlife during that phase of our life. So it's really very important to think about care and our parents and what kind of planning that needs to be done for our parents.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of challenges, and I think there's a lot of opportunities for the people who find themselves in this category of either, in their 40s with parents 65 or older, and they still have young children in their home. And that encompasses a lot of people in this country. So let's start out by talking about, I think we'll lay some track to get to the sandwich generation here. Can you describe the life cycle of aging?
So life cycle of aging can be looked in five different stages, right? We have first stage being independence. Our parents are independent. They're living their best lives. They are traveling, engaging socially, and doing everything. And, they're living their life. And then they're in their interdependence. That's the second stage. Usually our parents are in their 70s and 80s, and that's the interdependence stage where they're needing some level of care and support that we need to help them navigate through. Then there is the dependency stage. Fourth stage is crisis management. Fifth stage is end of life. So as you can see, as we navigate through the different stages of our life's parents' journey, it's very important to have conversations about what our parents want in the first stage, which is when they're more independent, and being able to let us know what they would like. It's sometimes a difficult conversation to have. Sometimes we think that's too far away. Let's not talk about it at this time. But it is really very important to start talking about those kinds of things early on. because it's very important to know what our parents want and how we can support them through that process.
And it's never too early to start these conversations, I'm guessing.
That's correct. It's never too early. I personally, for me, I was in my 30s and had a parent who was in his 80s. So my parents, my dad was in his 50s when he got married. My mom was 15 years younger than him, but they were older adults when they had their first child. And so I had to think about these things in my 30s because I already had a parent who was in his 80s, right?
So what is your experience and what are your tips or recommendations as far as when to start these conversations, how to broach the topic, because in some cases it might be a little sensitive. And then what kinds of questions, what kind of dialogue is important for us to have with our parents?
I think it's really important, like I said, when our parents are able to communicate with us what their wants and needs are, it doesn't have to be a formal kind of conversation. It could be just in a very easy, you know, conversation about what would you like to happen if when you're getting older? And most of us will probably say, we want to stay at home. And so then the next conversation would need to be, okay, let's look and see what's possible and what's feasible. There are many different aspects to that, right? You have to look at their living situation. Is their home suitable for them to age in place? Do you need to modify some things? Do they have medical issues? Are they taking their medication? Are they going to the physicians? All those things that are going to impact whether down the road they're going to be able to live at home or not. And also the financial consideration. Healthcare is very expensive. Care is very expensive. There are limited resources to what can pay for a parent that needs care. And so to look at all those kinds of things and have a plan. And I think as much as it's a difficult conversation to have, because we none of us want our parents to age or have any needs, it's important to have their input, because I think as children, we find ourselves needing to make certain decisions for our parents. And they can be difficult decisions to make when we don't have any input or feedback from them as to how that process needed to be for them.
And is there a checklist or a guideline of some sort where you can basically sit down with your parents and say, okay, let's talk about these five different domains or areas of your life? If there's medical care, there's your living situation, there's your nutrition needs, there is your social needs. And it particularly gets challenging, I'm guessing, if a parent lives on the East Coast and you live in the Midwest or the Southwest or the West Coast, where you're not physically close to them.
That's correct. It can be very challenging because we all live our lives very independent from our parents. We have our own children. We often now, with the way life is, often find ourselves taking care of our grandchildren. So maybe our children are back at home again, and now we have grandchildren to take care of as well. And now we find ourselves having to take care of parents. I would say have the conversation with your parents so you have an idea. If you're living too far away, which often happens, there is an event, there is whether it's a medical or some kind of event that happens, and then you find yourself in the middle of also now caring and trying to make decisions about your parent, is to try to resource. Talk to the people around you. We often are not talking about senior care or parents' care. Parents have memory issues or physical needs. You will find that every other person in your life probably has gone through or has experienced similar kinds of things. And so be able to have these conversations without feeling that you're the only person who's dealing with this and you're alone. You will find that getting ideas from people, resourcing with professionals, tapping into what opportunities are out there and what kind of care is out there that will meet the level of care that your parent is at. So, and always know who your parent is as you're making those decisions of for care or place assisted living or smaller environments. Know who your parent is. It's about them. It needs to be right for them.
Right. I think one thing I've found useful for myself, and I am not a parent, and I don't have a parent who lives with me or that I'm responsible other than I do take care of some financial things for my mom. One of the things I found really useful is having, if your parents have a living trust, because a living trust really is the guidebook for how they want at least their assets distributed and how they want their medical care handled in the case that they are in a situation where they can't make decisions for themselves. And I don't know about other folks out there, but I like to review mine on an annual basis. And I usually pick the holiday season because I have a little bit more time on my hands during that period of time where I just take it out and I read it and I go through each of the sections and is it still current? Is it relevant? Have I changed my mind on anything? So I'm wondering if that might be a good way to tackle this or at least start the conversation is, first of all, find out if our parents do have a trust of some sort or even a will. So it gives us a little bit of a starting place. And then say, making an agreement with them, would you be willing to sit down with in a family conversation once a year? It could be your birthday, it could be a holiday, it could be whatever we all mutually decide to just, you know, go through this and make sure that we're still on the same page and that you still have these same wants and desires as far as all these different domains that we're talking about.
That's right. So that is very important and having an advanced directive. So a trust usually gives you a guideline or an outline of how you want things. An advanced directive can do the same thing. And there are advanced directive forms that you can get online that are really easy to complete without the financial burden of, let's say, the legalities, because not everybody has the ability to do a trust or, you know, trusts are also asset protection and things like that. But there are things like advanced directive. There is a form called the POLST. Which identifies what your wishes would be in the event of a medical emergency. So it's very clear for the individuals around you to know what your wishes are. And that's really very, very important, very essential for all of us, including at any age, for the people around us to know what our wishes would be in care or medical care or personal care, day-to-day living.
Okay, so just to give some clarity for folks who may not be familiar with the terminology, What is an advanced directive?
So advanced directive is a form that you can complete that will tell individuals in the medical world what your wishes would be in the event of life medical emergency. And so it would say, I want my daughter or my son or the person that I am designating as a spokesperson for me to advocate for me in the event that I'm not able to advocate for myself. So it gives authority to somebody to be able to advocate for you. It also has language in there that where you can communicate what your wishes would be if you had a medical emergency, how much intervention or how little intervention you would want the medical environment to provide for you. So those are really challenging questions when you are when you're dealing with your parents' life situation, is to make decisions for them when you don't know what their wishes were. And so it is a very, very healthy conversation to have with your parent.
Yes, and I think we could run in, you know, we can run into challenges when these advanced directives are in existence and we may not know about them, even though our parents have taken the step to put them in place and they may not have named a child or anyone in the family to be in charge of their directing their health care and their wishes. And I think it seems to me it would be important as the child of someone who already has these tools put in place to respect their wants. And if you don't agree with them, you can ask for clarity around them, but this seems to be a true expression of what their desire is, and their desire may not be what ours would be for them. And if we were in that position to have to make that decision.
That's correct. I think all of us that are children of parents always have a level of guilt when we're dealing with our parent issues, right? We have to remember that they are not our children. They made decisions of their own. Their life journey was their own. And so where we find ourselves, we have to see them at that moment and help make decisions based on that moment. And having these conversations is very healthy, but also always remember that you shouldn't internalize what your parent is going through at that moment. They are there, they made their own decisions, and so you just want to, where they are today is not where they were maybe a week ago, a year ago, 2 years ago. So you need to be kind and gentle to yourself as you're helping your parent navigate through whatever phase they're at that moment, and identify care that will support them both emotionally, mentally, and physically at that moment.
It can be men and women. I'm guessing from the research that I've done, it's generally more the female that takes on the caregiving role, not that the husband or son-in-law isn't involved in some of the decision-making. But what are some of the things that the caregiver will find as far as challenges when they find themselves in this sandwich generation category?
It's difficult to be the caregiver. You're trying to be the daughter, the son, plus you're on top of that, a caregiver. It's very challenging, right? You have your responsibilities, you have work, you have your children, and now you're trying to navigate your parents' life situation. It's trying to identify, are your parents ready to be in an assisted living? Are your parents now need to be in a smaller environment? Do they need care at home? Maybe a few hours of care at home to support them. So trying to find out where your parents are, and making sure not to, as you're making those decisions, not to feel guilty, be aware of your parents' needs. Their needs are as core essentials. For everybody worries about, everybody wants to stay at home, but sometimes that's not optimal. And so being able to navigate all that and still be kind and gentle to yourself, where you're not getting burnt out. You have to be able to rely on other members of your family. Maybe, you're not the only sibling in a situation like that. I think what happens is one person takes the responsibility and everybody else has an opinion, but try to have everybody chip in if they can. Of course, depends on their life situation, but it's okay to make decisions for your parents to get care, because you can't do it all on your own. I took care of my parents, and even for me, it was very difficult with my experience and this work that I do. I've been a nurse 40 years and working with seniors for 20 years in a small home setting. When it came to making the decision for my dad to go into a home or assisted living, it was a really difficult decision for me to make, even though it's what I counsel families and advocate for seniors. But I relied on my friends and my coworkers to help me that the decisions I was making were good decisions. So I have lived it on both sides of the spectrum as a provider plus as a daughter. And so I can appreciate how challenging it can be to be the caregiver. And what I often hear from families when they do get care or do a placement in an assisted living or a small environment is, I wish I had done this before. I can now be the daughter. Sometimes it's hard to navigate with child-parent relationships. As your parent gets older and now they're dependent on you, that relationship doesn't necessarily change, right? It's not always as rosy as we would want it to be. And so it's okay for somebody else to provide the hands-on care while you can still be the child who's enjoying that time period. And very often the parents are putting on a good front because they don't want to disappoint you. But in reality, their care needs are more than what you're able to do.
And through Parentis, which is the company that you co-founded, and you offer a lot of different resources through that organization, do you have, once again, checklist or recommendations as to when to know when it's time to have some of those conversations and make some of those decisions, whether it's putting someone, taking someone from the home that they currently live in and putting them into an assisted living type facility, or going from someone's medical situation to put them in hospice? How do people know? What are some of the things that they could durably rely on as to when it's time to do some of those kinds of things, whether they feel they want to do it or not? There does come a time, I'm guessing.
Right. So interdependence is when you see the need, where your parent is needing care. Maybe they're not able to drive as well anymore, or you go home and they're not cooking meals anymore. And so you don't really know the nutritional value of what they're, you know, or maybe the home is more cluttered, or they're not able to do the things that they used to be able to do. And so that's the time to start thinking about supportive care. So bringing a caregiver into the home, it could be as little as 2 hours, or it could be as maximum as 24 hours. So identifying what the care needs are, the time of day, you know, maybe your parent is not showering anymore, or your dad has health issues and can no longer take care of your mom. So trying to support their environment and help them still age in place and navigate through that. If there is, you know, if then their care needs are greater, where they need to be still in a social environment, they're still more or less independent, they can enjoy a community, a larger group of individuals, they're still active, participating in activities, groups, events, things like that. Assisted living may be a great option for them at that time, where there's a community, they're engaged, they're among people. But as they start noticing that they're needing more and more care, whether it's memory or physical or medical, the larger environments may not be able to support them. So in California, we do have a smaller model of care, which is 6 residential care facilities. They're licensed for 6 individuals. It's a small, intimate group. You have 2 caregivers during the day, 1 caregiver at night. And so you're able to meet the specific needs of the population that is aging, whether it's memory or physical or medical. And so being able to identify when that is, and also knowing your parent. If your parent was somebody who was introverted and or not very active and just really enjoyed certain things within their own space, you have to, whether you feel like an assisted living would be great or not, you have to know your parent and understand your parent. And putting them in a large environment when somebody's introverted is not really the best suited for them. So always think about what your parents' journey has been and where they're at, and not necessarily what you feel they should be doing. So knowing your parent and understanding your parent to help support them in the environment that's best suited for them.
Right. Let's talk about the stage 5, if you will, end of life.
Yes.
It seems that that's a very difficult conversation to have. It's not comfortable for anyone, but I think it's probably equally as important to the other 4. And that is knowing, hopefully before they get to that point, what their wishes would be when they do get to that point. What kind of celebration of life do they want to have? The hospice care conversation, if something gets to that point. the, you know, do not resuscitate type conversation with folks. What's the best way to handle kind of those more sensitive chats that we really need to have, but sometimes it's just really uncomfortable to have them?
Yeah. I think usually if somebody has a trust or a will, it's very specific in there as to what they want. And the way I discuss this with our with the families when I'm counseling a family as to what the next step should be for their parent is to say, what would they have wanted to do? If often, you know, our medical environment has changed and you want to be able to support them in their life journey, whatever that phase is. And hospice, we all understand it as somebody has 6 months or less to live. They have a disease process, stroke, cancer, whatever that disease process is, and the doctors have said 6 months or less. But hospice can also be palliative care, which supports you through your journey. Sometimes you have disease processes that are not curable. And would you want to be back and forth to a hospital? It's very challenging as a senior to be in a hospital and to go back and forth for it. So palliative care doesn't mean it's end of life, but it can support you as your care needs and bring the medical team to you. That's what's valuable. Yeah. And so it may be a difficult conversation to have, but it's a conversation that needs to happen before those events, before we get down that path, right?
Yeah, I remember when I have two brothers and our father passed away and he didn't have any directives as far as his memorial services or a celebration of life or anything. So the three of us sat and kind of looked at each other and said, do you know? And I said, I don't know. Do you know? And they said, I don't know. What do you think? So we were kind of like the blind leading the blind, and we respectfully made decisions that we think would be, you know, embraced by them. But that was a bit of a hard journey because we didn't really know. And unfortunately, I was not that close to my father. And my brothers were a little bit closer, but they never had those kinds of conversations. So I did some investigation after that, and I found some resources out there, which I'm going to put in the show notes today for our listeners. One was called Love Letters, and it's a book. It's about probably 25, 30 pages. And it just is a book of questions, and it's kind of a place where you can keep all the information about yourself for those who will need to handle matters when you're no longer here. It has all your bank accounts and your safety deposit boxes and your investment accounts and your credit cards and your passwords and your titles to your car and your housing information, insurance, has all of that in one place. So God forbid, when, because it's not a matter of if, it's when something happens to someone, then there's a resource that they can go to and say, okay, we're going to divvy this up. And Annie, you're going to take all the financial information. You're going to go close all the accounts. You're going to make sure that we get all of this taken care of according to the directive of the trust, or if you don't have one, if there's a will, you follow that. And if not, here's kind of the general duties that you would have. And I found that to be so helpful. Because when someone does die, it's a stressful time. It's a sad time. And we're really not in the emotional state, probably, to make that level of decisions. Whereas if we'd have had those conversations, we'd had those things in place prior, then it allows us to go through that grieving process or that emotional state in a manner that is more reasonable.
It's true, right? It's always a difficult conversation to have, but just like you found yourself in a place where you didn't know what your parents' wishes were and had to make all these decisions very quickly, right? There was no time to think about this or that. And often that's where we all find ourselves. There's a crisis and we're doing crisis management and trying to navigate through a system which is new to us. So having these conversations without it being very formal, you could be, you know, with your parent and say, mom, dad, if this happens, what would you want? I think as much as it's a difficult conversation, making those decisions at the end is even harder. And you always second guess yourself. Did I make the right decision? Is this what they would have wanted? So conversation. And also talking to your parents, instead of saying, as you age, leveling up is a really good way to think about our life journey. We're leveling up. And when you say leveling up, you have all the way to 100 to go. There are challenges that we come across, and there are different phases that we have need to make modifications on. But as we level up, we're also, it's more positive sounding, right? Aging in place, sometimes when you're talking to our parents and we talk about aging, it sounds very ominous often, right? It's very difficult conversation. But talk about as you level up from your 50s to your 60s to your 70s, what would you like to see? What would you like us to do when that time comes? And as much as it's a difficult conversation, I think your parents will appreciate you having that conversation, because their input is going to be very essential in how they live their lives.
Well, and I think the great opportunity in all of this, you know, over, I think it's 54% of Americans in their 40s, a lot of our audience can relate to this, will be in this sandwich generation. And what a great time for us all to sit down and say, what about me? What about when I'm that age? What conversations would be really healthy and beneficial for me to start having with my kids now? Age appropriate. You don't want to have a really robust conversation with the 5-year-old, but when they get to probably at least 18, where they're kind of entering their own level of adulthood, what do I want to set in place for me as far as long-term care insurance and what resources might be available, and start those things early enough, because then it's less expensive as well to have those things at that point in our lives, and to really have a playbook in place for yourself as a result of having gone through this situation with your parents.
That's right. And having those conversations with also designating somebody who will be therefore advocating for you. So whether it's a spouse or a partner or a friend, somebody who would know what your wishes were to help advocate for you. And yes, thinking about long-term care policy, healthcare is becoming very, very expensive. And in this country, there are no resources that pay for that. If you have long-term care policy, it will help. If you were a veteran, the veteran gets benefits. The spouse may get a percentage of benefits, but it also all goes to what assets you had. So really good planning to have a good financial planner, get long-term care policy, look into that. And you're right, the younger you get it, the cheaper it is very helpful, because healthcare is just getting more and more expensive.
I'm curious, and it's just because of the timing of all this, it's obviously not a conversation that you and I would have had 2 years ago, but we've had this thing called COVID in the last couple of years that we've all had the opportunity to navigate through. Sometimes that's been a landmine for some people, a minefield. How, if at all, given your experience in this industry, did that change things for this sandwich generation? Did they learn more? Did it become more frustrating? Was there any nuances or new things that came about that were useful and valuable as we move forward now, hopefully without this pandemic coming back anytime soon?
I think, yes, the pandemic was certainly very challenging for everybody, especially for our senior population. There was more isolation for our seniors living in the larger environments, where once things got shut down, the families were not able to see them, advocate for them months and months and months. And so it's been an interesting 2 years. We're still in the middle of things. Things have loosened up, but we're still very careful about, how we are interacting with the community. In the smaller environments, we did better. We were just a smaller environment. We were able to give access. We were able to do indoor-outdoor visitation and things like that. But it was challenging. Parents were taking care of their children. Kids couldn't go to school. And then on the other side, you had a parent that you were trying to care for or advocate for. But we're in a better place. Things are better, you know, vaccinations have helped us, and just being very aware of where our parents are and how we can support them through that.
Yeah, it was definitely an unexpected opportunity to learn a lot about ourselves and others, wasn't it?
It was.
I always like to leave the listeners with 3 to 5 tips or resources or something that they can take away and immediately put in place that might be valuable to them if they find themselves being classified in this sandwich generation. What do you have? What do you have for us? What are some things that people can immediately start to think about? They can go do online and do some research, books they can read, resources that they can get in contact with, conversations they can have with family members, siblings. What would you say that the top guidelines would be for that?
I would say first thing, talk to your parents. Know what their wants and wishes are. Start the checklist of what they would want at whatever phase they are. So start having those conversations. Ask your parents if they have a will or a trust, if they have an advance directive, especially in healthcare with HIPAA and everything like that. It can be challenging not to know what your parents' wishes are as you're advocating for them. So find out if they have an advance directive. Have they thought about who can speak for them or what their wishes are in the event something happens? Find out where, if they do have it, where all those things are, because it's, you know, it may be at home, but where at home? So trying to organize where those important documents are to have everything in one place so that you know where to go to find that out. There are many resources out there in the community. There are the ombudsman services, there are senior advocacy groups that you can contact and resource to get information. There are care managers that can come and do assessments. We do assessments at no extra charge to our families, where we can go in, look at the home situation, give advice as to how they can modify the homes and what maybe the care needs can be, and at what phase that person is. And so we work very closely with our families in helping them navigate. And in every state, I have friends in different states, every state has resources that you can tap into. Online research is alive and wonderful, and you can get many resources and information through that. But also talk to the individuals around you, the people, whether it's a coworker or a friend or a cousin, or you know, of where you find your parents. There is no guilt as your parents age. It's not because of you, or you know, they're in a situation or memory or whatever the situation is. So you will find that people around you have gone through this experience, and their knowledge is valuable as well. Personal experience, personal having gone through, walked that path, is very valuable for you. So do speak to people around you, and just advocate, you know, that will help you navigate through this and run resources. There are many rooms where you can go in for advice, and people can resource that way. So many different avenues, but the most important, I think, is to not think that it won't happen. You know, we're all walking that journey with our parents and with our friends, and just being able to identify and know what our parents' wishes are.
Yeah, and I think it's particularly important in the Western culture. And in other cultures, the Japanese, they honor their elders, and the American Indian, they live for the information and the wisdom that's passed down through their elders. In Greece, being an old man is a really good thing. People really honor that. In India, it's almost a social stigmatism if you have any ill motions or actions or feelings toward the elderly, but it's not so much in this country. And so I think to have these kinds of conversations is a little bit foreign to us because it's culturally, we didn't grow up like this. It's the younger you are and the faster you go and the more money you have and all those things seems to be the bright, shiny thing that's, you know, waving in the breeze. But to have these really important conversations about how we support one another as we, you know, we evolve and mature is coming to the forefront, because I think the population in our country, the elderly population is getting older because the baby boomers are in that, you know, yes. not in stage as far as dying, but they're in that kind of final chapter of life. And so I think this comes at a very good time. I'm curious if there's anything else that we didn't talk about that I just didn't know to ask you that would be important for us to talk about.
I think just to your point of it culturally, how in different parts of the world, things are different. I'm Armenian and I grew up in Jerusalem. And so I grew up in a society and a culture where extended families and support was there. However, the world has changed and work changes. And even in this country, right, being having a cultural background where now you're in this country and you have work obligations and it's a different lifestyle. We're not all living in close proximity to each other the way in other countries it's possible or easy because you're still maintaining your cultural roots. In this country, even with the cultural background, you're still living in this society where you have to work, you have to send your kids to school, and you have to support, maybe you have to support your adult kids, you're supporting your younger kids, and now you have to support your older parents. Community, resourcing, supporting each other. And when I say talk to your friends, it's all support. We're trying to build community to do that. You know, caregiving is difficult, but as we find ourselves within that journey is to be able to be kind to ourselves, don't forget about our core needs, not feel guilty. We cannot change our parents' journey. We are where we are. They've made their own decisions and they are where they are, but to just help them, support them through that process. Sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's difficult, but you know, rely on the people around you also and reliable individuals that are expert in this field to get information from and be knowledgeable. Research what's out there, what care means. Go out and look at some places so that when that time comes, you are knowledgeable about what is an assisted living, what is a small environment, what does that look like. You may not need to think about those things for another 5-10 years, but you're done your research, you're knowledgeable, you're aware, because what happens is when you find yourself in a crisis mode, you're needing to make decisions very quickly. Right. And so knowledge is important.
Well, I sure appreciate this conversation today. And like I said earlier, I'm going to put for the listeners to go to your website, the Parentis website, as well as your Verona care, residential care facility information. And is there if you have a Facebook or an Instagram, I'll certainly include that as well. So I always like having important and relevant conversations with people who have a lot of experience. You have 40, like you say, 40 years of being an RN, a registered nurse, and you have 20 plus some years of being the owner and operator of a residential care facility. So it seemed like a daughter of senior parents, and you have your own children.
I have my own children. So, yeah,
you know what you're talking about. You find yourself square in the middle of all this. So I appreciate your time today, and we'll get all this information out there for you listeners. Do yourself a favor. All the guys and gals are listening, have these conversations. This is important. This will save a lot of uncertainty and a lot of rust decisions and rash decisions in your future. And it never hurts to reconnect with our parents. I was having a conversation with a group of women the other day, and this one woman said, you know, I just sat down with my mom and I asked her, how did you and dad meet? because she never knew. And she said she learned so much just from that conversation of how they met and how they dated and when they got married and where they first lived and when they decided to have kids and all this. She said, I just learned so much. And she said, the one thing I wish I had done is had it sooner, had the conversation sooner than I did. So the sooner the better. And once again, thank you, Arda, for your expertise today in the conversation. I really appreciate it. And I think it'll add a lot of value to the listeners out there.
Thank you, Annie, for this opportunity. It's been wonderful. I wish all your listeners the best, and be kind to yourselves as you become caregivers.
There you go. Thanks, everyone. You guys take care of yourselves, and we'll talk again soon. Take good care.
Thanks, Annie. Bye.
Bye-bye. That's a wrap on this episode of the Badass Soul Seeking Warrior podcast, where we focus on creating a life that we love. And until we meet again, stay true and be you.